Welcome to another episode of Ubuntu Radio. I am honored, seriously honored to have my first celebrity guest here. I'm a celebrity guest. You know, I'm proud of the fact that I started Ubuntu Radio with the idea that I want to talk to just my friends, regular folk.
Right.
And the notion that everybody has a story, right? Everybody has a story to tell. Everybody has a perspective. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we reach out for the stars and we don't realize we got bright ass people around us.
Right.
So I wanted to talk to my friends about that. But I got a star in the sky here. Chucky Brown, illustrious guest, NC State legend, basketball, NBA, former NBA player, coach. The reason Mr. Brown is here because I reached out to him on Facebook about the present situation going on in our country today vis-a-vis Donald Trump, mm-hmm. but more specifically, how our athletes, NFL players are responding to it. And as a former professional athlete, as a brother, mm-hmm. I thought it was just appropriate that we get somebody who has some understanding that whole lifestyle
right.
and what might be up there. So, I mean, you can Wikipedia Mr. Brown, but introduce for the people who may not know, because we got some young people out there who may not know who Mr. Chucky Brown is.
Okay, Chucky Brown played professionally for 12 different teams in the NBA, which is an NBA record. Coached the developmental league for 8 years. I was an NBA scout for 7. Born and raised in New York City, grew up in Harlem.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah, born and raised in New York City, Harlem.
I did not know that.
Went to Cardinal Hayes High School in the Bronx before we moved to North Carolina, small town, Navassa. Shout out to Navassa. Yeah,
East or west?
It's down kind of like, what is it, southeast?
Wikipedia says southeast. Leland.
Leland, yeah, well, Leland is the town, like the bigger town. Okay. Navassa is like the smallest, like one of the last standing black communities in North Carolina.
Yeah.
Is Navassa. They said Leland because Leland was closer to Wilmington. Everybody knows Leland and Wilmington, but they don't know Navassa because Navassa is such a...
You blink and you're through it.
No stoplight.
Nobody stops.
You just keep going right on through Navassa. You know, my father was a Navy vet. Some of the stories from when he was in World War II, you know, I have a certain way that
go
on.
Because a lot of times when people bring up the flag... and the veterans.
Mm-hmm.
So for a man who's got a father who was a veteran,
right.
it's almost an either or.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a veteran, then you're against everything. And we're talking about Colin Kaepernick, we're talking about Kneeling, we're talking more or less police brutality and injustices committed against African Americans specifically, but more minority folks in this country. On this podcast, we're going to talk. We're going to talk about a lot of shit. We're going to have some fun. I don't want people to think it's going to be all heavy because eventually we're going to talk basketball because enough people in this area live and die by this game. And here's a man who played this game on all levels. So we're going to talk basketball. We're going to talk about his journey. But I want to get into it to talk about his perspective as a professional athlete because he did it for a long time in terms of what's going on in the NFL. Not so much what the idiot in the White House is saying, but the response. So let's get it out there. What is your opinion on black athletes kneeling to protest or demonstrate their disagreement with social or judicial policies that seem to be skewed against African Americans in this country? I would say at this present time, but it's always been that. Well, what is your opinion on that?
Do you know what beef is? Do you know what beef is? Ask yourself. Do you know what beef is? Check out this bizarre rapper style used by me.
What is your stance on what's going on now in the NFL with Kaepernick?
My stance is that I have no problem with them kneeling. You know, I listened to what Kaepernick said when he first came out. You know, he initially was sitting, and he didn't even let anybody know why he was sitting until somebody came and asked him why he was sitting. So he told him, you know, why he was sitting, and then he had the meeting with the guy, the Green Beret, and then he decided that it would be more respectful to take a knee. So I don't have a problem with him taking a knee. You know, when you read up on what the national anthem, you know, stands for, what it was, you know, what the words were, I have no problem with what Kaepernick is doing, what the other guys are taking the knee for. I have a problem with the people that don't want to address the issue and they want to make it about the flag and about the military, and no matter how many times you say it,
right,
you know, it comes back to, oh, you're disrespecting this flag and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's gotten to the point where, you know, I told my wife this. I'm like, you know, they're really making it hard to want to stand for that thing, period. And I just stand for it because that's what we've always done.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I never knew the words or did research on it or anything like that. But since I've been able to do my own research and, you know, you read up on Black history, and it's like, well, man, you know, no wonder they didn't want us to read, you know, 400 years ago. No wonder we couldn't, you know, they didn't allow us to read. Anyone, you know, caught teaching us to read was killed. You know, no wonder. You know, I think that the more we educate ourselves, the more that the white supremacy gets exposed. So I don't have a problem at all with what they're doing. I think they should continue to do it, but I do have a problem, like Jerry Jones and them, I wasn't feeling that. You know, the whole unity thing. All right, you unify, but are you going to address the cause?
Correct.
You know, when I first moved to Cary, I was taking classes, finishing up my degree. So I told my mother to find me a place to live because I was staying over Trees and Leaves. You know those apartments, Trees and Leaves, over by NC State. It's the apartments over by Trees and Leaves. That's over, like, you know, if you go down and you take a left, you go to Method Road, right? Take that right. Uh-huh. And Trees and Leaves is the next apartment over there to the left. So I was staying at Trees and Leaves, and my car got broken,
no,
too. Yeah, broke, stole my stereo and all that. So I told my mother that when I left to go, I was going to play for the Lakers. I said, go find me a place. I don't care where to, just find me a place. So she found me a place in Cary, nice little town home. So I was like, all right, cool. I come back home, and I'm pulled over three separate times, and I'm asked, what am I doing in this neighborhood? You know, the first time I was like, all right, well, you probably ain't used to seeing no brothers. Okay, right. Cool. Then the second and third time, I was a little upset. Like, yo, I live here. You know, we get pulled over for what we look like. You know what I'm saying? We get treated a certain way for what we look like. And I was telling another guy, you know, he asked me, had I ever experienced any racism while in the NBA? I said, well, you know, not on the court, but off the court. I remember in Ohio when I was a rookie in Cleveland, I stopped to a gas station to get a Hawaiian punch. Got a Hawaiian punch.
Man, remember the drink.
Oh, yeah, I remember
it's
the drink.
Vivid.
75 cent. It was 75 cent. I gave the dude a dollar, right? So I'm with a friend of mine, John Morton's cousin. His name was Brian. So me and Brian, I got the gas, gave the dude my dollar. The dude took my quarter.
Didn't want to touch you.
Didn't want, just flipped it to me. So my quarter hit the floor. So I'm looking at him like, yo, what's wrong with you? You know, and Brian grabbed me and said, yo, let's just go. So the dude said, yeah, I'm gonna call the police. So I left the quarter on the floor and just left.
He flipped it and said he was gonna call the police.
He was gonna call the police.
Because he felt what?
Threatened. And that's what, you know, this is all about. And I try to explain, like, I'm really surprised that some of the football players that were in school with me and used to come to my room and play Nintendo with me, how the only reason why I'm patient with them is because, you know, I've spent some time with them as kids. We were kids back then. And I'm patient with them, trying to explain to them, and, you know, this stuff ain't right. You know, why do I have to learn about your history, salute your flag, if you don't even know nothing about my history other than Martin Luther King, Jackie Robinson, you know, Rosa Parks, you don't even know nothing about Claudette Colvin. Why is that? So until you learn more about me, why should I learn more about you and salute your flag? You know what I'm saying? So I'm totally with what Colin Kaepernick is doing. And, you know, it may have cost me a couple of jobs, but so what? I'm cool. I got my retirement. I'm cool. You know, I'm just trying. Right now, my whole goal is to be able to leave something for my children.
Gotcha.
Y'all can't hurt me. I got three girls.
Okay.
Y'all can't hurt me.
You're a brave man.
You know what I'm saying? Hey, they can't hurt me.
I got to talk. I got to tell what I feel. I got to talk about my life as I see it.
And if they decide to want to do something to my children, I'm going to be out of here quicker than I thought.
This goes out to you. This goes out to you. And you. You, Biggie, you. This goes out to you. This goes out to you.
This goes out to you, you, you. Your reign on the top was short like leprechauns as I crushed so-called Willie's thugs and rapper dons. Get in that ass.
That's just how I feel. Like I said, I've had 49 good years. I've had 49 good years. But I'm not going to sit here, you know, not say anything. Now, I want people to know what side I'm on.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I feel like I'm on the side of right. I'm not going to sit here and try to toe the line and, you know, be in the middle. You can't be in the middle. I don't care what you say. You can't be in the middle. Either you here
right.
or you there. You know what I'm saying? And if you don't want to say nothing, I'm fine with that. You know what I'm saying? But I'm going to let you know what side I'm on.
When did that personality and that willingness to speak out start coming? Because you said there was a time in the NBA
right.
when you played there that, I mean, nobody really
right.
addressed these. And that's the thing. I think a lot of times our stars and the people we look up to,
mm-hmm.
they do their part. They have the foundations right. and they put right. money. At the end of the day, being able to put money to change lives, to have programs out, that is really what needs to happen to affect more people.
Right.
But being able to sometimes just say shit. And now, obviously, social media, you can. LeBron right. can get up there and basically make a statement as if he was on TV.
Right.
But has there been a time post NC State professionally
mm-hmm.
where you've had to, where somebody wasn't with you, like in the shop in Ohio, to hold you back, where you had to just say, God damn it, you're going to hear me right now?
No, I never.
Or have you always been able to sort of do what brothers have always been able to, just keep it in check and keep moving?
I've always been able to say, you know, what I've wanted to say or what I felt. I've never, that time in Cleveland, I've never had to deal with a situation like that before other than that time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, by the grace of God, you know what I'm saying? So somebody was with me. So it just happened to be somebody was with me. But I've never had to deal with it any time like that. Other than the Cleveland time where I was ready to grab him because I just, you know, why the disrespect? I don't even know you. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I felt. So other than that time, now I've always been able to say, you know, what was on my mind. Like even now, like when I go work out, you know, I'm a member of the country club where I work out at. And it's like sometimes like, you know, when you're like, it's probably like five or six other black people in there, which, you know, I try to be pleasant. I am a pleasant guy. I'm a mm-hmm. nice guy. I have no problem being a nice guy. I talk to anybody.
Right.
Don't matter what you look like. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I've been there speaking to, you know, I speak to everybody, you know, all of them. It's like sometimes some people might feel a little comfortable or they think they could say and get away with it. So I just kind of like, I put the brakes on a lot of stuff. So I have some people that used to speak to me don't even speak to me anymore, which is fine. Because I want you to know where I'm coming right. from. Don't think that just because I'm in here talking to you that I think like you do.
Right.
I mean, I do run into that too.
So you also mentioned sort of the life of an NBA player, and we're going to, I guess, say that's the life of most professional athletes. They're mm-hmm. in a bubble.
Right.
It's especially NBA, back-to-back, yes. you're just running. You're yes. running. You sleep, you get to the hotel, you right. wake up, you go shoot around, you go to the game. Yep. I'm assuming that's what it's like. And you said you didn't really get to read the newspaper because no. you're just preparing. So where do these brothers, these professional brothers mm-hmm. and sisters that we look up to, where do they get woke? Where do they get the information, man?
I think nowadays it's easier.
Okay.
You know, nowadays is there's no excuse not to know what's going on because of Twitter,
right.
Instagram, Snapchat, all that stuff that they have. See, we didn't have that. So, you know, we were, like I said, we were like sheltered from a lot of that stuff. They kept a lot of that stuff away from us. Plus, we on the go all the time. We're not really reading the paper because, oh, they might say something crazy about
right.
you. You know, most of the stuff that I got from the newspaper, you know what I'm saying? And it's probably mostly good stuff,
gotcha.
You know, so they don't send you the bad articles. So, you know, I never really was one to really get into reading the paper. But like I said, nowadays, the guys have no excuse. It's actually hitting them. You know, Dwayne Wade's first cousin, you know, was shot
right.
and killed. So you see that type of stuff. And, you know, LeBron getting nigger written on his house.
Did not know that.
Oh, you didn't hear about that? During the finals last year, they wrote nigger on the outside of his house. Yeah.
Did they not notice?
Yes, they wrote nigger on the outside of LeBron James' house, because they got a house out in, I think it's in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it's in a nice neighborhood, you know what I'm saying? And nigger was wrote on the outside of his house before game one of the final. Oh, yeah, I thought you knew. Yeah, that was because he looked, and I could tell.
Was he some kind of way before that? Or did he start getting more vocal after something like that? I didn't even know that.
He was somewhat aware before that.
Okay.
Before that. But he really got a little more vocal after that. Okay. After, but yeah, that happened to him. Yeah, look it up. It's online. They wrote nigger on right before game one of the finals. You know, people wonder why he was struggling in game one. That's what it was. You know, you can't possibly have that happen and you go out and play a game and just forget about that.
Right.
You know, sports is supposed to be like a release from the real world, but you got your kids. LeBron got, what, 3 kids, mm-hmm. maybe? You don't know the and if someone can get close enough to you to do that,
get to your kids.
That's alarming. I mean, you know, that happened to LeBron. I mean, you know, so there's no way that these kids, these young men cannot be aware of what's going on unless they just don't want to be.
Hey, yo, kid.
What's up?
Remember when I used to be dope?
Yeah.
I owned a pocket full of fame.
But look what you're doing now.
I know. Well, I know. I lost touch with reality. Now my personality is an unwanted commodity.
Can't believe
I used to be Mr. Steve Austin on the mic. 6 million ways I used to run it.
At this point in their life, you have enough to share mm-hmm. about basketball, about life. You're probably thinking about going into coaching. I think you've done some coaching.
Right.
Now, the coaches that you've met,
mm-hmm.
just listening to people now,
mm-hmm.
like Pop seems to be one of the most woke
right.
coaches out there. I think you played for
him. I played for Pop.
You played for Pop.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you played for other teams. You've mm-hmm. been around a bunch of coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Have you met coaches besides mm-hmm. like Pop, who seems to be somebody who would bring this shit up in a locker room?
Right.
Are there coaches who do this, or just X and O's, fellas, I see tomorrow, and... Mm-hmm. Whatever you do in your life, just make sure it doesn't make the paper.
I think Pop is one. I played for Lenny Wilkins, who went through a lot. Lenny Wilkins is from Brooklyn, went to Boys and Girls.
Okay.
Lenny Wilkins would have been one that would talk about it. I think Paul Silas was another, but those are black coaches that would talk about it that I played for. Chuck Daly, I think Chuck Daly would bring it up. Chuck Daly wasn't one that shied away from it. You know, so he's probably one of the white coaches that I played for that would bring it up, that wasn't just X and O's, that kind of talked to you off the court, wanted to know how you were doing right. as a person. Where most of them, I mean, I loved Rudy T, but I never had like a conversation with Rudy about how my life was outside of basketball. But I still have a lot of respect and love for Rudy. But I think Rudy was just a non-confrontational guy.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying? So people that race is uncomfortable to talk about with, they ain't gonna bring it up.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying? So I think Chuck Daly would bring it up. Paul Silas would bring it up. I think Lenny Wilkins would bring it up. I played for Mike Dunleavy. I don't think he would bring it up. Mike Dunleavy's from New York, too. I think he's from Brooklyn or Queens somewhere. But I don't think he would bring that up. I never had a conversation with him my life outside of basketball.
What about the leaders in the vets? And eventually you became that
right,
guy. You became
right.
that veteran presence in the locker room. The
right.
guys that know better, you get a 22, 23-year-old guy.
Right.
He's running around. He's got his millions. He's doing
right.
whatever he's doing. And somebody's got to sit him aside and tell him,
right.
you know, the real.
Right.
Were there players that did that for you? Or,
yes.
again, did people just overlook what black life was like once you become a professional athlete?
I was fortunate enough to have good veteran players.
So who was in Cleveland with you?
Larry Nance was my guy.
Okay.
Mentor for me. He was a guy that pulled me to the side. I don't think he called me Chucky the first year. I was Rook. That was my name. So he would say, "Hey, Rook, this is what you got to do. Hey, come with me, Rook. Come over to my house." You know, I hung out with him a lot and learned a lot from him about being a professional. And he talked to me about, you know, how my life was, mom and dad, how they doing, how your sister doing, you know, what do you like to do, wanted to know more about me.
Mm-hmm.
So I still talk to Larry to this day. Rick Mahorn is another one. When I was in Jersey, I was in my third or fourth year in New Jersey. He was another one that cared about me and tried to help me, like being a professional,
mm-hmm.
and cared about me other than basketball, saying so. Another guy is probably like Sam Perkins. So I was lucky enough to be around good veteran players, but the way that the league is going now, you know, so young, there's very few veterans to show these young guys how to be pros. And I mean, as you look at the NBA, you always see the older teams are the ones in the end that are playing, you know?
Right.
So if you want to follow a blueprint for the NBA people, that's what they should do. You know, find good veterans because they're out there. But yeah, I was fortunate enough. You know, Larry Nance helped me out a great deal. Tree Rollins was another guy. You know, when I was in Cleveland, Tree was there. So Tree and Larry were good guys and just helped me just become a pro.
So again, we're on Ubuntu Radio talking right now with Mr. Chucky Brown. Right now, we're just talking about his NBA life and the reality of trying to stay woke, trying to stay aware in when you're in a bubble. And so we jump back to these athletes now. What the Dallas Cowboys started on Monday, and I think I was watching a little bit Thursday night, locking arms.
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to take focus off of the primary intent of the protest? And what do you think is going to happen to the protest movement? Because I foresee come Sunday, nobody kneeling. And I'm foreseeing, you know, I know there's 53 men on an NFL roster, 47 of them locking arms,
right,
and two or three brothers kneeling. Now that's going to look odd and anti-team,
right,
anti, more anti than anything. So I'm fearing that what they did just killed every momentum in the movement. Is that something you see? Or
I see the same thing. I wasn't feeling the locking of the arms thing. I think, you know, the Aaron Rodgers thing. I mean, I'm cool with you, you know, being sympathetic to, or appearing to be sympathetic to the cause here. What's happening is it's getting watered down.
Right.
And focus is off of police brutality and the mistreatment of people of color.
And the one thing I can promise you is if we turn against each other based on divisions of race, or religion, you know, a bunch of okey-doke. Just because the tweets are provocative, then we're not going to build on the progress that we've started. We won't build on the progress that we started.
And we're not saying we're against unity.
Right.
That's not what we're saying. We're saying we're against police brutality, you know, and what I've told people that have brought this up to me when I'm out walking around, I'm like, listen, if there had been accountability for Sandra Bland, for Eric Garner, for Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin, Walter Scott, Philando Castile, had there been accountability, we wouldn't even be this far, because all people are asking for is accountability. And just because I want accountability, police officers, doesn't mean I'm anti-police at all. I'm not anti-police whatsoever. You have a job, make a mistake on your job, you're held accountable for that mistake on your job, you know? And if you're talking about the so-called mistake where you've taken a human life, you know, say even like with Michael Brown, obviously we all know that kid didn't try to grab that gun. You know, this story was made up. George, I know we wasn't there, but we know.
Right.
We know. And George Zimmerman, for Zimmerman to say that the kid jumped out of the bushes and beat him up, he should have been held accountable when the dispatch told him, we got somebody on the way. Right after that, anything you do after that, you're held accountable. But yet, we're always told, oh, obey the police, obey the law. That's not what he did, and he still wasn't held accountable. So if you're so right, then why did Sandra Bland's family get money? Walter Scott's family get money? Why did Philando Castile's family get money if you done nothing wrong?
Right.
So I think that the point has been watered down. And I mean, it's a funny thing how anytime you have a black cause, there's always a distraction found to take you away from that. And it's almost like they tell you, but don't tell you this in these words. Like, you know, like basically like, nigga, you better be happy we ain't lynching y'all. You know what I'm saying? We ain't still lynching y'all. Nigga, you better be happy we ain't still doing that.
Go tell him, I'm gonna tell with that, don't tell them. We've been underwater since they threw us in the boat. Selling cotton, picking blues, rock and roll, railroad building, serving white America before we was dope dealing. Brick laid the birth of a nation, it's the rock. White House, black man, plantation, it's Barack. But we still can't cross the street without the cops trying to send my man as well. The whole neighborhood watch. They changed us to the auction block, but now we changing the locks. Cause even Bill O'Reilly's daughter out here drinking some rock. Now that's what I call a 21st century fox. Well, Megyn Kelly trying to tell me Santa's white, it's in the grand murder was right. I just remember rap stars, the new rock. I pull strings like the orchestra, shut down your corporate. Nat Turner run up in the doors to your doors. Through with 100 niggas ready and 100,000 more for you.
I see the future Martin Luther dreamt when he was a man. I feel the love my mama fought for. See the scars on her hands. Oh, there ain't no looking back now. No Lord as far as I ran. So take these chains or give me death. Either way, we coming again.
I hear people talking about athletes should keep their mouth shut. Uh-huh. Is you got money.
Right.
Shut up.
Right.
As if money solves the issues that you addressed about 25 minutes ago, that you're in a certain community in Cary, right, but you're still getting stopped.
Right.
So just because you have money does not absolve you from the very issues that Colin Kaepernick started kneeling about, the very issues that people are protesting all over this country about, the very issues that are lining our court system,
mm-hmm,
that we don't know.
Right.
There are many Sandra Blands we don't know about.
That we don't know about. That's
Philando
right.
Castillo, some Eric Garners we don't know about. One of the things that very liberal-minded want to say is that, isn't it a wonderful thing that we're even having this conversation now? You guys did a wonderful job with your kneeling, because now me and my community and my neighbors, we can now talk about these issues.
Right, right, right.
What the fuck is talking going to do if you ain't going to put your life, and forgive my French here, if you're going to put your life on the line for a cause, what are you willing to do?
Right.
Black folk in this country for 400 years have stood there on the vanguard, right on the line, and said, we are ready to be whipped.
Yep.
Well, we ain't ready, but we took it.
We'll take it, yeah.
We took it.
Yep.
We took it. So don't tell me that, man, thank you guys. It's like, thank you for showing me.
Mm-hmm.
No, dude. I'm showing you so you can do something.
Right.
The best among our people have done shit.
Mm-hmm.
They've walked.
Yep.
They've marched.
Yep.
But then they try to get stuff done because my son is 14. He's a freshman in high school. I don't want him to have to deal with this, but he did.
Right.
Last summer, walking through a neighborhood walking through his friend's neighborhood, he's on his skateboard. He gets stopped by a cop asking him, "Do you need to be here?"
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Stopped by a Raleigh cop. No, the cop said, "You should go inside." Why? Why? Why should my son, 14 years old, who's skateboarding outside, why should he go inside? So why do I want that to be my son's legacy? I know how painful that felt. I mean, have I dealt with racism every single day? No.
Right.
But I can empathize.
Right.
And so I think the divide is, some folks cannot empathize, and I can't fault you for not having the ability to see my reality.
Right.
But to simply dismiss it?
Right.
And
that's the problem.
That's the problem. And the thing that gets me is, when I was young, I used to look at those black and white newsreels,
mm-hmm,
the dogs going after people, and always wonder, man, what would it have been like?
Mm-hmm.
And I almost felt cheated because, you know, I'm 14, 15 years old. I got all this energy. I'm going, man, I would have been there and I would have done this, that, and the third.
Right.
But then what I'm realizing over the past year and a half, it's not so much the ability to go out and demonstrate for a cause.
Mm-hmm.
I have to even convince you
that
the words coming out of my mouth are the truth.
Right.
That's the part that's just lately going, making me say, I'm just done with some people.
Right.
I'm done. I'm to the point sometimes where I go, I'm just tired of having to convince you of my humanity.
Yes. Yes.
That I have a right to say, all right, there's like at least two different Americans.
Right.
There's one for people of a certain way.
Right.
And maybe it has nothing to do with color. Maybe it has something more to do with money and power. But there's still two Americas, and there's still two realities that people deal with.
Mm-hmm.
If enough of us are telling you this keeps happening over and over and over and over and over and over again, at some point, if 50 million voices are speaking, man,
right,
you just got to go, you know what? Maybe there's something there.
Let's look at this.
Just look at this and be accountable.
Yes.
Be accountable, because at the end of the day, the argument goes back, well,
Right, right. It wasn't me.
It wasn't me. My family just didn't do this.
It's over. Slavery is over.
But how do you even get them to see? And you've been in positions where, as a former professional athlete, mm-hmm. I'm sure you get invited to speaking engagements. You're mm-hmm. around certain people where you can say something. So do you feel like sometimes there's just a distance or a depth that you're just never gonna get with certain populations? And how do you deal with that?
You talk to some guys on social media, I just think it's, you know, they're never going to see where we're coming from.
Right.
Because they don't live in that world and or that type of environment. They don't experience it.
Right.
So they're never going to see it. So, you know, I try to do my best to explain to them and try to get them to understand where I'm coming from. But yeah, you get to a point where, you know what, it's like, you know what, you know, they're just never going to get it. But I don't quit saying my point.
Right.
You know, I don't quit because I feel like you shouldn't give up, you know, what you're going to say. I don't have any confidence that they're going to ever pick it up, though.
Right.
But I'm not going to quit saying what I got to say. I'm not going to get to the point where I just say, you know what, I don't even feel like explaining no more. No, I'm going to keep on saying it. You don't have to get it, but I'm going to keep on saying it, and we're going to agree to disagree. So I'm to that point now where you just have to keep doing what you're doing and agree to disagree, but don't give up. Don't stop saying your point. Do not stop saying your point, because I think that's what they want. They don't want to hear about it, but I'm going to continue to remind you about it. You know what I'm saying? So you're going to continue to hear about it from me. And if you don't want to continue to hear about it from me, don't talk to me.
You think a lot of that strength to persevere, but your father, you said your father mm-hmm. was a World War II vet.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about, because I think, again, you've been in some places where you've been around black folks who have mm-hmm. quote unquote made it to a certain level, to a certain financial status, but we're still dealing with certain realities. Your father was a World War II vet.
Mm-hmm.
Will you credit him for giving you that kind of strength, because you knew,
mm-hmm.
man, my dad dealt with this shit and he persevered, he overcame it, because I'm sure he's got stories that he told you about
mm-hmm.
life as a black man in World War II.
Oh, yeah. I think it definitely came from him. And, you know, one of the stories that he told me was how when he came home from the war, came home, had his uniform on, and wanted to go into a restaurant in Wilmington, mm-hmm. downtown Wilmington, and how he couldn't go in the restaurant. So that was one of the things that probably hurt him the most, that, you know, when he came back from fighting for this in a certain place to go eat. And that bothered him till the day he died. I mean, The Navy was good to us when he died. They paid for the funeral. They gave us the little triangle flag. Mm-hmm. You know, we got all that. But he also told me about how when they were on the ships overseas, how the black soldiers, they couldn't eat in the same mess hall. You know, so just little stuff like that. Wrote "Go Home, Nigga" at the Air Force, the prep school. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I mean, you just had that. So it's just like, okay, when some of these people going to realize that, you know, racism still exists.
Right.
It ain't going anywhere. And it also is taught in the house. Because my father could have very well told me, oh, don't deal with no white folks. You know, they ain't about shit.
Right.
You know, don't fuck with none of them. That's not what he told me. He said, you know what? Treat people how you want to be treated. Don't matter how they look. You know, there's good black people, there's bad black people, there's good white people, and there's bad ones.
Right.
So you have to decide, you know, how they treat you to who you're going to deal with. You know, so he told me that. So I've never, like, looked at someone and said, white, he ain't shit. You know what I'm saying? Or he black, I need to fuck with him.
Right.
That's not how I, you know, if you was cool with me and you was black, you was cool with me. If you was cool with me and you was white, you was cool with me. If I didn't get down with you and you was black, I ain't fuck with you. Right. Same thing if you was white, it don't matter. I just wanted to be around good people. I mean, I think my father raised me right, and I commend him for how he came up and the shit he had to go through not to have me to the point where, you know, I'm angry at everybody because of what he went through. Now, I can tell you, I did go through a period in my life when I first started, you know, doing my own little history lessons for myself, you know, learning about Tulsa, Oklahoma, learning about Slocum, Texas, learning about, you know, Rosewood. I went through a period where I was mad.
Well, how old were you around?
When I started doing all that, I was probably about 40. You know, when I started learning more about our history, about how when the black mother had her baby, she had to breastfeed the white baby first before feeding her own child. Right. So I was about 40 years old. I went through a period where I was angry. And so I was angry at everybody.
Looking back, what do you think of the person you were from, you know, like consciousness? Let's say age 14 to 40, so we're talking 26 years. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, my thought is you would question, had I known, what would I have seen walking around NC State? Because I asked you, what was NC State like? The assumption is, had you known these things, perhaps you would have seen the sort of the power struggles and the interactions at NC State. So do you go back and judge yourself harshly since you didn't know these things? Like, almost like you were living with blinders on? Like your reality was that different?
I don't judge myself harshly because, like you said, I didn't know.
Right.
But, you know, it was just like I was a young kid. You know, I came to college at 16, 17. I was young. Just wasn't aware. Maybe I wasn't ready to receive the information because I can tell you, my father used to always tell me certain things and he, you know, want to talk about certain things, but I didn't really talk about them until later. So I'll say I wasn't ready to receive the information, but I'm not harsh on myself because I just didn't know. I just didn't know. But once I found out, you know, I started, you know, reading and talking to people and, you know, sharing little pieces and bits of black history because they don't really teach, you know, our history. You know, they try to change it and they don't teach it. So I think that, you know, just me doing stuff on my own and, you know, just talking and asking questions, the anger left when I first started reading about stuff there, and it was real, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, just learning about, like, even like Patrice Lumumba, learning about him, which I never knew about, you know, it was angry because it's like, yo, why are they not teaching this, though?
Anybody who ascends to the level of professional athlete, I always say you had a PhD in your sport if you make it to the NBA or the NFL. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like any other PhD that spends just hours and hours in the library focusing in on their craft, not oblivious.
Right.
But in order to get better, you've got to be focused in and let some other things go to the side.
Mm-hmm.
So LeBron is speaking out now. You're absolutely right, because of social media, kind of, you kind of have to do it because the rest of the world is going, you didn't see this shit too, dog?
Right.
What the? You didn't see this shit too?
Right.
So are we expecting too much from our athletes who have PhDs in their sport because they were so ultra focused in on it? And the grind of a professional season is just training facility, workout, eat, family, get some me time in, and then just do that for 6 months. Are we expecting too much from our athletes to stay well? Because there was a time when there was an Ali, there was a Kareem, there was a Jackie Robinson, there were people, Jim Brown, before he lost his fucking mind.
Before he lost his fucking mind, exactly.
There are people who were speaking out.
Nah, I don't think we're expecting too much at all. I think that, like I said, because of the social media thing, athletes have to be aware because all of them are on social media. I don't think we're asking too much at all. You know, I think that if an athlete is not aware and does not say anything, it's definitely because they're trying to avoid it. Like, you know, like even like a guy like a Cam Newton, you know, it's disappointing to see that he won't say more. You know, Cam, you recognize him. You get to a certain point where they can't stop you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like LeBron, there's nothing they could do to LeBron James now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There's nothing they could do to Michael Jordan now. You know, one of my favorite people is Magic Johnson. They can't do nothing to him now. So Magic speaks on it, right. You know? So Magic Johnson, no, you can't do nothing to me now. You know what I'm saying? You can't do nothing to hurt me, so I'm going to speak on this. I disagree with this. I'm going to say something about it. You know, you don't have to harp on it, but you let people know where you stand.
LeBron, top of the game, the best basketball player probably on the planet right now. Michael Jordan, right. Easy. Was and is, probably still is, the greatest basketball player of all time. Magic Johnson, greatest point guard of all time.
Mm-hmm.
You said those people now are comfortable enough, or in a place, like you said, you're 49, there's nothing they can do to you, you can speak your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys have attained a certain status where they can. But what about the dudes below them? Like the guys like, I mean, the brother I see speaking a lot is, I think his name is Malcolm Jenkins.
Yeah.
Philadelphia Eagles.
Right.
And there was Eric Reed, who knelt right next to Kaepernick.
Right.
There's the Bennett boys,
Martellus
and Michaelis.
And Michael, yep.
So what? And there were guys in the Rams that got flack last year by the police department in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
For those coming up and, and just in the middle of the smoke, just putting the fist up.
Right.
So what about, you said the bigger guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people like, you can't fuck with me. There's nothing you can do. I'm going to speak up.
Right.
What is the responsibility of those guys under, who is still maybe 4 years in, five years in, still trying to eke out a career? Because people don't understand. A professional athlete, the average, you're the exception.
Right.
Average guy is what, 3-4 years?
3-4 years, yeah. 3.5 years.
And you're done.
3.5 and you're done, yep.
Does the fear of the athletic hustle just kill any notion of, let me say something. Do you think, you go back to in this day and age, it's almost as if they're pressured. Boy, I got to say something. Cause everybody's seen what happened in New Orleans. Everybody's seen what happened in Minnesota. Everybody's seen what happened in L.A. Everybody's seen what happened in St. Louis. I got to say something.
I think those guys that are like bench players, I understand their position. I know what side they're on. I don't want them to jump out there and lose their job. Everybody's not going to be down. I don't expect them to jump out there by themselves.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They got to feed their families. I always tell guys, you know what I'm saying? They don't care what you eat or how you eat. Be careful if you jump out there. Like, you know, those guys, like the guys in from the St. Louis Rams, Tavon Austin was one of them. And the St. Louis Police Department had the audacity to be mad with the garbage that they've done. I can't blame them if they don't jump out there. I know what side they're on. So I don't want them to lose their job unless the whole entire Black population is going to come together. I can't expect them to jump out there and lose their job. I don't want them jumping out there like Ray Lewis. They're not jumping out there like him. They're not jumping out there like, I don't understand what Jim Brown is doing. They can't do nothing to hurt him. So I don't understand Jim, you know, and Jermichael Finley and, you know, with Michael Vick saying what he said. These other guys, they want to keep their paycheck and, you know, keep making that good money. Ray Lewis, if you doing so well, they can't do nothing to you now either. They can't do nothing to you.
So what is he fearing? What's the cooning for?
I don't know why Ray cooning. With his whole explanation of why he got on two knees and prayed. I mean, come on, Ray, you need to stop that. I mean, come on, you shouldn't even been on the field. You know, I've had a football player at NC State. He just told me, he said, you know what? I'm glad they leave us in the locker room during the anthem.
Oh, I was going to ask you.
He said they leave us in the locker room because there ain't no way they can get me to stand for the anthem. Man. Working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. All day long they work so hard till the sun is going down.
I mean, I know, for example, in the NFL, the Army paid, I think, $5.4 million as of 2009 to have this conflation, this mixture of the NFL stands for. I mean, mm-hmm. then you listen to the language of the NFL. I was mm-hmm. listening to this. The bomb, charging, there's mm-hmm. violence, aggression, one army against the other.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to war against the Patriots, blah, blah, blah. Before 2009,
right.
football players stayed inside.
Right.
Kid told me there's no way they could get him to stand for the anthem. He said he's glad that they stay inside. That's what he said to me. So I was just like, hey, man, you know, just know the consequences. You know,
so what do you think is going to happen? We can talk about this all right. day, but what do you think is going to happen? Because I also want to talk to you a little bit about professional basketball if you got time.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen, let's say, by the playoffs of NFL? So by December, after Thanksgiving. And my fear is that this shit is going to die down.
Yeah.
And what do we do if they do just a masterful job of unifying all of America and mm-hmm. we're standing for unity, but you're not standing for shit?
I would say that guys have to continue to take the knee, even though you're beaten, you're talking upon deaf ears, you're talking to brick walls right now. Continue to say, hey, I'm not against unity at all. I'm all for unity, but I'm still for the cause that started the whole kneeling. You got to keep doing what you're doing, but I'm with you. I think it's going to stop. I think guys are going to stop kneeling. Because they've done a masterful job at watering.
It was so quick.
They've done a masterful job at watering down the cause and still not addressing the reason why the kneeling took place. And they've turned it into, you know, disrespecting the flag. You see people burning jerseys. The guy called Mike Tomlin a no good nigga, you know, because he left the Steelers stayed mm-hmm. in the locker room. Then the one dude came out and said he wished he would have stayed with his team. I can tell you, when I played in the league, we were never out on the court during the national anthem unless it was a national TV game.
Gotcha.
When it was an NBC, back then it was NBC. So when we played on NBC, yeah, exactly. So they would show the national anthem and they show everybody standing across the foul line.
Mm-hmm.
Any other time, we were in the locker room during the national anthem. So, you know, it's a lot of fake patriots out here. And I tell guys, you know, if you want to prove to me how much of a patriot you are, do what Pat Tillman did.
Right.
Pat Tillman had a $1 million contract on the table and said, you know what? I'm going to go fight for my country.
Right.
You can't tell me you love this country so much and you don't want to pay taxes to help rebuild. They say it's crumbling. So don't tell me you love the country so much. And why do I have to, what do I owe this country? The country ain't give me shit. I had to work for everything. So where did the country give me what? I had to work for everything and I'm on the defensive all the time because of the color of my skin. So tell me what the fuck I owe this country.
Right.
Please tell me. You know what I'm saying? The country don't owe me nothing, and I don't owe the country nothing. I worked hard for everything. Leave me the fuck alone. Paranoia getting the best of me. I don't want nobody next to me. Don't talk unless you got a check for me. I don't see nobody ahead of me. Foreigns, we jump out the back of them. I cannot wait till it's back and done. Don't care if they foreign, we crash them. Take a look at my bitch, ain't a bad one. Paranoia getting the best of me. I don't want nobody next to me. Don't talk unless you got a check for me. I don't see nobody ahead of me. Foreigns, we jump out the back of them. I cannot wait till it's back and done. Don't care if they foreign. No, but it is. There is this undertone when people talk about, especially athletes,
mm-hmm.
as if the country gave you this opportunity.
No, no.
And they drafted you 43rd in the second round to go to Cleveland. And, you know, whoever was the owner, he gave you a check.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they kept you in the league, Chuck. They kept you in the league because the average career is only 3 years. So,
right.
I mean, they just gave you a chance. They kept giving you a chance. They kept giving you a chance, man. Nah.
I work for that.
You work for that shit.
I work for that. And if I didn't have, like I tell my daughters, I tell, you know, if you don't bring something to the table, ain't nobody fucking with you. Obviously, I had something to bring to the table with my services that they wanted. You know, they didn't just come, you know, put names in a hat.
Yeah,
this dude right here is going to get a scholarship. That's not what they did.
Right.
They saw me play in high school. They liked what they saw. You know, the same thing with my daughter. I told her the same thing. If you don't have nothing to offer, they messing with you.
Right.
Ain't nobody messing with you. And that's it's business. Treat it as business. That's what it is. Woke up this morning. You got
yourself. We're going to segue a little bit here.
Okay.
And I'm hoping I'm not taking too much of your time.
Oh, you could.
I was having this conversation with somebody today, telling them I'm about to talk to you. And one of the things I always admired, even from a young age, I'm a sports nut. I was telling them what I remember, for example, about baseball. I played baseball for a little bit in middle school. I remember about baseball when I first came here in the 80s. I remember there were no black journeymen in baseball. There was no middle reliever, black dude in baseball that kept getting a paycheck for 10 years.
Right.
Either you were an exceptional Negro, or you were not in the league.
Right.
We said the average professional career is 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
You carved out a 13-year career because of doing exactly what you said, making sure that whoever it was making the decision found value in what you had to offer.
Right.
You didn't make an all-star team?
No, never made an all-star team.
Never made an all-star team.
Nope.
You've got the ring. When Jordan took a break, you got a ring. The King was the best player in the world. You know. You were in positions to maintain. And what I'm saying is that when I was that young, I always respected the black players like that because I realized that there were not a lot of them. Guys that, in basketball, these are guys who would, like, end up on the Jazz. You know what I'm talking about? There's a certain kind of brother.
Yes, in Utah.
Who's in Utah.
Yep.
Or in Minnesota.
Yep.
You know, or, well, maybe even Portland.
Portland, too,
And Boston.
Yeah, Boston, especially Boston.
Especially Boston. There's a certain kind of brother who I realize they figured it out, how to get along. How to make sure that they can just maintain and do their thing for it. Because at the end of the day, it's a job.
Right. That's all it is.
We look at it when you're a little kid, like, whoa. There's a point in my teens where I go, maybe after I got to NC State and I realized the kind of work that it takes to just be competitive in the ACC and soccer. It's a job.
That's a job.
It's a job, and I could not imagine professionally what that's like. So talk a little bit about that. Because we have everybody aspires to be the Jordan, the LeBron, but there ain't but one LeBron, there ain't but one Jordan, there ain't but one Magic, and the league is full of literally Hayward Workmans.
That's right.
You know
that's
what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, that's right.
The league is, and now Hayward Workman is a referee. He's going to be making money for the next 20 years.
Right.
I think the genius, the real athletic genius is what you've been able to do for 13 years. Finding a way to contribute.
Right.
Because your game was old school, Pat Riley, New York, you come in the lane, you're getting something.
Yep.
I'm protecting Akeem.
Right.
I'm protecting Akeem. There was a Brazilian guy. There was a Brazilian guy, a center. Remember this, like 94, 95 on Houston. What was it, like Herrera or something like that?
Oh, Carl Herrera.
Yeah. There are guys that were just, Akeem is going to do his thing, and we're going to muscle your ass down so that Akeem doesn't have to.
That's right. Amigo.
There's a job.
We called him Amigo.
There's a job for everybody.
Yeah. See, Amigo got hurt in 95, and that's why I was able to play more.
Easy.
That's why I got called up. Amigo got hurt. He hurt his shoulder and he was out. So then I got to come in. That's why I played. I took advantage of my opportunity.
What is a day like for a professional basketball player who's not necessarily Akeem? And I think Sam Cassell was on the team.
Sam was on the team. Clyde was there,
The guy that's on TNT.
Kenny Smith.
If you're not those guys, what is the day like? In part two of my conversation with Mr. Chucky Brown, we continue to talk about his basketball experience. He was a world champion with the 1995 Houston Rockets, led by Akeem Olajuwon. Again, spent 13 years in the league. I know a lot of folks have aspirations for being professional athletes. He can talk about that reality, the day-to-day grind of it, and the lessons he's learned and has been able to use in his post-basketball career. So for now, Ubuntu Radio is out. Come on back.